The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Hello, hello, hello. Happy Wednesday and happy April Fool's Day. No, you are not listening to Vina, but today you are listening to Tiffany. And I'm standing in for her today, the amazing Vina Jones Cox. And tonight we're diving into a topic that every investor, new or seasoned, needs to hear. But first, I need to remind you that this is a live show, so I welcome all of your calls. The number is 1-877-772-9658. And the text line is live, although I've been here a couple of times and I've never received a text, but I'm interested in one. So you can text us at 513-432-4961. And of course, if you are at work or traveling and unable to get to a line, the email is open at Vina Radio. That's V-E-N-A Radio at gmail.com. So I mentioned that we were going to be diving into a topic that every investor needs to hear, and we're talking about creative deals, and they can be powerful, profitable, flexible, but they can also go sideways when the details get really sloppy. And so tonight's guest, I believe she's seen it all, and I know her, and I'm happy to be interviewing her today. I think Venus home with a touch of laryngitis, so maybe she'll be back with us tomorrow, but we will see. This lady's a real estate investor. She's a retired attorney and someone who has spent decades helping investors avoid or maybe even clean up the messes that come from creative deal mistakes. And I believe that Kathy Russell is on the phone. Kathy, are you there?
I am. Hi, Tiffany.
Hey there. I feel like didn't I just see you the other day online or something?
Yes, yeah, yes, we did.
I think I did. Thank you for joining us this evening, Kathy. So can we just jump right in at the top? So I understand that you've reviewed thousands of deals over the years. Okay. So how common is it to see creative deals where something has been missed, even by experienced investors?
That's a great question, and you're right. Yeah, for 30 years I've seen it, and it's become more common recently because, 30 years ago when I first started doing this, people got their information in different sort of ways and potentially more accurate sort of ways. These days, with the proliferation of online guru and YouTube University, you just don't know what kind of information you're getting, and a lot of investors out there rely on that information and just take it and run with it without really consulting some sources that they maybe should have. So I would say it's definitely getting more common.
Yeah, I say that's a big April Fool's. I definitely do appreciate all of the information on YouTube University and all of the people that speak up about various topics in real estate. But you are absolutely right. Accuracy is a thing. And even some experienced investors miss it.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with you. I've learned how to do stuff on my car and all kinds of stuff on YouTube University. But, you know, when it comes to work of a legal nature and property ownership, I think that probably something a little more is prudent.
Okay, so what would you say that is one big thing, or maybe it's just a bunch of small things that add up to what people miss?
Yeah, to a few off the top of my head is, you know, either not knowing how to assess a deal. And you know, that can be quite complicated because you have to know how in order to know how much to pay for a property, as a creative investor, you have to know what the property is worth after it's fixed up. You have to know how much it's going to take to fix it up. You have to know, are you going to sell it? Are you going to rent it? So if you haven't learned how to do all those things, you're going to have trouble assessing the property and knowing what's a good price or not. And then, of course, there's paperwork, not having the correct paperwork, which is going to protect you and your seller, and the appropriate disclosures and all of the things that go into that, which someone should be preparing for you, you know, if you've done it right. Insurance, I mean, I've seen creative deals where they don't even bother to get title insurance because, oh, there's hello, we don't need it. You know, no, you do. And the wrong information on the property insurance. Those are probably the top four off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. And so what we're talking about is the things that really trip people up, right? And the paperwork is saying one thing and maybe even telling a different story. So I like the way you put it. You said assessing the deal, because that encompassed, you know, what the valuation is from the beginning, the after repair value, and even up until the exit strategy. So those were some really good ones if people are taking notes out there. But then you had a punch list too. And so when I think about things that trip people up, this is where a creative deal in my mind can really live or die. So you said people tend to overlook missing title insurance, and man, shout out to some of my folks that really, really do great title work, and property insurance. I've even heard some of our folk on our RIA calls that you are a part of talk about maybe even wrong people being named on the title insurance. And yeah, what about those
absolutely.
Disclosures, Kathy? What are we thinking about disclosures? Because something that's popping up a lot in conversations as well.
Yeah, just letting your seller know. And, of course, the specific disclosure depends on what you're doing. You know, there are disclosures if you're doing subject to, which if anyone listening doesn't know what that is, subject to means you are buying a property and making payments on the mortgage, subject to the mortgage or lease option. So your specific disclosures are going to depend on exactly what kind of deal you're doing, but basically everything that the seller is going to need to know going forward. Are they going to be able to buy another house if they are selling their property subject to? What to do if someone ever mentions the word due on sale clause, which is a big, you know, panic button for investors. So just disclose everything to protect that seller for everything they need to know about what this means for them going forward in their life.
And so 30 years that you say you've been doing this. And so do you find that people think that they understand the deal fully, but then afterwards you see the paperwork and it tells quite a different story?
Some do and some don't. You know, there's always the overconfident investor who doesn't mm-hmm. want to hear any advice because they know it all. And then there's the investor who doesn't think they know it all or is happy to take advice. So, yeah, and again, that goes back to where they got their information and who they learn from, and they may, you know, have information that is just incorrect, which leads them to either the wrong paperwork or the wrong disclosures, or just, you know, just titling, how they title the property. I've seen that done wrong because, for example, in a subject to transaction, a lot of people teach you to go out there and put the deed in your name, and that's wrong for a number of reasons. Even if you're the best, most responsible person in the world and you have a property in your name and somebody else, the mortgage on that property is somebody else's name, that's a bad situation because mm-hmm. if something happens to you, even if, again, you have no bad intent, then they have no way to get their property back, and you're not making the payment anymore. So all those things.
a whirlwind of trouble is what I hear, Kathy. And our sponsor is telling us that we need to take a break. And guys, what we're talking about is creative. And we want you to stick with us because we're digging into the details that trip people up all the time. And get your pen and pencils ready and give us a call if you want. But stay tuned. Don't go anywhere because we will be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing, and I'm your guest host tonight, Tiffany, and I am speaking with Kathy Russell, a 30-year retired attorney, and she spent quite a bit of her time working on creative deal cleanups. I'm going to give it a different nomenclature every time we come back, because to me, it's kind of a nightmare if you have to unravel this paperwork, but I will say we were talking about the details that trip people up, Kathy, and this one thing that like really fascinates me is people just tend to overlook stuff. Like, and you mentioned overconfidence or maybe even bad training or maybe even rushing or wishful thinking. But the question that I will say is, do you think social media has made people believe that creative deals are really easier than they really are?
Yeah, I definitely think that's true.
Yeah, you hear a lot of people say that. I always liken it to Home Depot, and because they say you can do it and we can help, and then they have you thinking you could build a house, and I'm like, dude, like I can't. I'm not a contractor like that. I can't build a house. I don't know what to do. But I swear they make you think that you can build a house, and I think the social media has done some of the same thing for us and given us a sense of overconfidence. Like you said before, about these creative deal structures.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I would never have thought of it that way, but that's really true. I think you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, no kidding, right? So thinking more about it in segments, you've seen deals that look perfectly fine up front until they weren't. Can you share an example of a deal that seemed fine, but later on you went back and looked at it and it was something really small that somebody overlooked that made it go sideways?
Yeah, let's see. What would be a good example? I've seen a few that on the surface looked okay, but then when you dig into the paperwork, you find out that something happened. For example, they didn't put the property into a trust. They put it in their personal name, which we talked about, or they didn't get the information from the seller about how to actually make the payments, or they didn't plan for, I'll tell you one that actually happened even to me, and even with doing all the paperwork right, is one time I got a call from a judge in North Carolina, here where I live, and in North Carolina, divorce is done in what we call district court. So this was our lower court, the district court judge, and she was quite irate with me, and she's, Miss Russell, I have Mr. and Mrs. such and such, and it was a seller on a subject two deal who was getting divorced. And she said, I have to distribute this debt, and I don't know how to rule on it. And I had to go appear in court. Luckily, it was during COVID, so I could appear on the phone. But basically, I had to explain that someone else was contractually obligated to make the payment and that she didn't have to distribute the debt, but that she could distribute the debt equally in the event the buyer defaulted. So that was a super interesting one, and we do have that in our paperwork now. So.
Yeah, that payments is something. You bring up at least you knew how to maneuver around the court, but it made me think of a like I think you said subject to or something like that, and maybe one of the lenders actually sold the loan, and then you didn't know about the payments. You had them set up to go to, you know, loan company A, and then loan company A sold it to B, but B didn't tell you, and so you were still sending to A and not knowing that it was B, and then you have a catastrophe on your hands with little to no information because you didn't have that information in your toolkit to know that what happens if a loan is service released or transferred out. I mean, it's the small things that trip you up is what I'm learning.
You're right. Because if you haven't been, you know, instructed about all that in the closing and know what to do in case any of those things happen, you're right. The devil's in the details. Mm-hmm. And even maybe your deal's tight and everything's done right. But if you skip those little details, yeah, it can lead to big problems on the flip side.
Yeah, and so thinking about a small detail of a missed payment or any, like you said, not putting it in a trust, like how expensive would it be to fix a small problem when a deal goes sideways? And I say expense like financially or emotionally, because I could imagine it would keep some people up at night. And it's not just monetary, right? It's like you in the middle of a deal and now you're stressing about your side of the deal, the investor side of the deal, the financial partner side of the deal, and maybe the person that you got the deal from in the first place.
Yeah, and I've seen some pretty panicked emails and some pretty panicked posts on social media, which is even worse because that means they don't know who to ask, so they're asking the collective. You know, saying this just happened today and it's, you know, going to be foreclosed. I'm going to lose it. A number of things. And that's certainly, gosh, got to be, especially if, you know, it's your first one or you're not experienced, that's got to be a huge emotional cost. And as to the monetary cost, I will just say that someone once told me a long time ago that, you know, if you'd have spent $500 to have your stuff looked over by a knowledgeable mm-hmm. person with legal experience on the front end, I would have saved you $5,000 on the back end.
So. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And you're funny. It's like, mm-hmm, let us go to Facebook and ask the collective, can anybody help me with this problem? It's like nail biting situations that I probably never. I don't want to experience that. And so we're talking about paperwork and. Often you hear people talk about how bad real estate investors are at the details of the paperwork. So that's where they might take the shortcut. So when it comes to paperwork, where do you see investors most often cut corners? Like, and what does that lead to? Like maybe generic or recycled documents or something of that nature?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you never would want to use a generic form document simply because every creative deal is going to be unique. And so you're right. I have seen people take, you know, like forms I had done for another deal and thinking they can just go, oh, save a few bucks, mark them up themselves and reuse them. But, you know, those documents were drafted for a specific situation, and that's not your specific situation. So if you want to try to wedge your situation in there and make it work, you know, chances are you're going to miss a detail. You're going to do something wrong. And it's just, I mean, it just bears repeating the thing about spend a little up front. You'll save a whole bunch on the back end because, you know, to have someone look over it is not only going to save you money on the back end, but another thing that I think is under noticed is that having that closing with, you know, depending on what state you're in, a title company or a closing attorney who sits down with you, explains all the paperwork, goes over it, it protects the investor in a huge way because it lends legitimacy. So many times I hear these people doing quote unquote kitchen table closings. Mm-hmm. So I got the documents. I just don't need a lawyer. I don't mm-hmm. need title. Go to the seller's house and sit down and sign the paperwork. Well, you know, when something happens, so many times someone who you've saved their property with some creative deal, and because you're their best friend and you're their hero. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen this happen. But you know what? 2 years. Or maybe even 6 months later, they're in a better situation. They forgot that you were their hero, and now you're their enemy, and you rip them off. And all it sometimes takes is hearing a word of somebody else. And if you came to their house and signed papers at the kitchen table, as opposed to they went to a professional office and had a closing, or even you know, if it's on Zoom with professionals, in their mind, that's a huge distinction, because now it's not just they're going to run to the Attorney General's office and complain about you, because you have had professionals in between you as a buffer and done the closing and answered the questions. You're taking liability off yourself, and you're really lending legitimacy to the whole process.
Yeah, I love that. It's actually clean, and it does go a long way in the form of communication and preventing the deal from going sideways. Even when there's a hiccup or a small matter that occurs, you could draw reference to this was done in a professional way, and there's a maybe somebody that I can reach out to help me bridge the gap, as opposed to, hey, let me see if I can find this guy on Facebook or whatever, and he did
yep.
me wrong, and so I like that, as opposed to that we used to call it the bank, the vanilla or the paintbrush approach. Like, you just take the paintbrush and just go all the way down the wall in white, and one size fits all. I think they call those onesies when we're little, but like one size
onesies,
fits all. They're
right.
onesies, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the world of creative real estate, most definitely one size does not fit all.
Yeah. I mean, it's April Fool's, so we can't all wear onesies like that. Right. No, thank you. The visual,
yeah.
right? The visual behind that. I love it. Right. I have them laughing here. I'd say we need to bring a little humor to it. I mean, I'm not one for jokes, but I do like the April Fool's thing. So I will ask you this one question before we take for a break. But have you ever seen a deal where both sides thought they had a completely different agreement because they heard something different? I'm thinking about that kitchen table closing that you were talking about.
Yeah, I have. Actually, I have seen people come into a subject to closing, which again is you're not paying off their mortgage. You're just going to make the payments.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the investors bring a seller to the table where they did not understand that. They thought, like it, with any regular closing, that their mortgage would be paid off that day. That's I always tell people, you know, if you bring your seller to the table with an understanding of what's happening today, I'll take it from there. I got you. I'll make sure they understand everything. I'll make sure they're confident. I'll make sure they know they're protected. But if you bring a seller to the table who doesn't even understand that someone's going to be making their payments as opposed to being paid off, I might not be able to save that deal. So absolutely.
Yeah. And so when you really think about it, especially on the seller side, the creative deal really only works when all sides fully understand what is happening, like everybody understanding the same thing. And so, again, you talked about bringing legitimacy, getting your information and your teaching through reputable sources that have the whole deal in mind, so that it's a win-win-win all the way down, all the way down the ladder. And so I want to dive a little bit into that seller situation that you talked about, because you said something about the Attorney General that made me think about, are there ethical risks or other legal risks that should be considered when you're thinking about creative deals from the seller's perspective,
well,
maybe?
Yeah, I would certainly say that if you are taking title to someone's house, and the mortgage is still in their name,
mm-hmm.
and you do not put every adequate protection in place and give every possible disclosure you can and protect your seller in every possible way, that's definitely an ethical issue.
Interesting. So, and you said disclosure. So then what about the legal ramifications of the ethical issue?
Well, I think they're sort of on the same path. And the reason I mentioned the Attorney General's office is because at some point, and this was probably 23 years ago in this state, North Carolina, there was a gentleman out of Charlotte who had some 40-some-odd properties and under a subject to deal structure. And he was receiving payment from all of his tenant buyers, and he stopped making all the mortgage payments. So that's certainly an example of a legal issue, and that, you know, I think he ended up going to jail, but whether or not he did, it's a legal issue. If you're legally obligated to make someone's house payment, you stop making it, especially when you're getting paid. You know what? Not even especially. Under no circumstance, if you are doing any kind of creative deal which obligates you to make a payment to a third party, under no circumstance should you ever miss that. And that's why I mentioned the Attorney General, because they sort of, for a number of years, back 23 years ago, they were hot on the trail of every investor, and every investor had a bad name in this state. And if you were doing subject to, they were literally calling bandit signs and tracking you down and trying to go after you. So yeah, I mean, just make sure your paperwork's right, and make sure you're protecting your seller and fulfilling your obligations, and you should have smooth sailing.
Yeah, I've often been on many calls where I've heard many investors say that they stay in the middle of the deal, and Vina in particular, and she'll say that she pays that particular mortgage note before she pays other bills. Just, you know, even if her even if she's not, you know, have a profit or cash flow, because it's that important, not only to protect it from a legal aspect or ethical, but to retain the relationship or maintain that relationship with the person. And what is that, Kathy? It's being impeccable with your word, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? I agree with that. You have a lot of bills to pay, and if you sit down and look at them, truly the one that should come to the top of the list is the one that not only do you owe, but also if you do not pay, you will be adversely affecting someone else.
Well, that's a good way to look at it, for sure. I think people might take another look at it and might think about it the opposite of you, but I definitely agree with you when it comes to that thing.
Well, I like what you said. It's not just legally and ethically, but, you know, if you want to have a career as an investor, I mean, do it for the right reasons. But in addition to the right reasons, if you want to have any reputation as an investor, you better not ever hurt someone over a creative deal, because that word will get around and you won't do more of them.
That's right, Pete. We all reference Pete Fortunato a lot, and he says people do business with people they know, like, and trust, and the trust is the big one. That's paramount. I was reading something about that the other day on the actual seven layers of trust, and it's not just your word, but that consistency matters. And so I think that ethical and legal, like you said, does tie in together, and that is one of the foundational pieces on being a good real estate investor all the way around. And so with that,
absolutely,
this is a great time for us to take a break. Remember, guys, this is a live show. Our lines are dead right now, which I am really surprised at. People usually call in, and maybe it's because it's April Fool's, or maybe it's because of the weather, but the number for you guys to call, 877-772-9658, or the text line, 513-432-4961. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tiffany, Real Live Real Estate Investing, and I'm here with Kathy Russell, and we're talking about creative deals gone wrong and all the different things that we can do to ensure that they don't. But first, since our lines are not lit up, I'm going to give that number one more time. The call-in number is 1-877-772-9658. I'd like to go over a little bit of housekeeping tonight. This is Wednesday night, so I believe that is Tech and Tools Focus Group for us folk out there. It is all about free property management software for rental owners. It's online, and it is free. And you can find information about that at Cincinnati REIA. That's CincinnatiREIA.com. Tomorrow is our in-person meeting. So Cincinnati REIA's in-person meeting, the early meeting is Wholesaling 101. And the main meeting is, again, creative deal autopsies. So I believe there are going to be three members that are going to give you all the deets on the last creative deal they made and how they found it, how they convinced the seller to do it, and what structure they used and how it's turned out so far. So if you want to meet us live and in person and you're in the Cincinnati area, that ticket is free and open to the public. And again, you can get more details and you can sign up at Cincinnati REIA, that's CincinnatiREIA.com, and I hope to see you in the building tomorrow. So back to you, Kathy, and we were talking about what happens when investors do not fully think through the seller situation. So what are some of the financial consequences you've seen from a badly structured deal?
Well, a lot. If you're the buyer or investor, you generally, not every creative deal is a foreclosure situation, but a number of them are. So you may have put down some money up front to stop a foreclosure or reinstate a mortgage. And if you then don't have your paperwork right, you can lose everything you put in, not to mention the payments that you've made after that. And on the seller's side, you know, the consequences can be even more dire if the paperwork isn't done right. I think I mentioned before that if someone else is making your mortgage payments and something happens to them, anything, they go to jail, they get ill, they just stop, they have financial difficulties, then you now don't own your home and you are still obligated on the mortgage. But with the proper paperwork, all of that can be mitigated, and everyone can be protected, and everyone will know what to do if any of these things happen.
Yeah, that goes back to that communication and making sure that you have a legitimate systems in place, either through that title company or the real estate, the attorney, to help you with that closing so that you can have those good documents in place. It looks like we had a bite, so I've got somebody on the line. Are you ready for a call today, Kathy?
Sure.
Okay. Hey, Russ. How are you? Can you hear us out there?
Yes.
Hey,
yes.
Russ from Connecticut. Thanks.
That's Russ.
Thanks for dialing
Hi,
in today. What question do you have for Kathy?
Question, Kathy. I'm based in Connecticut. I would guess my question was more kind of how does the paperwork, I guess, would differ between state to state, or does it also differ between municipality? Because I may have something coming up in Connecticut.
That's a great question. I don't believe, to my knowledge, it's ever different between municipality to municipality. There can be state laws that can affect things, such as what your trust law is, or there are a couple of states, and I don't believe Connecticut's one of them, that it's very difficult to do some creative deals. But again, the basic paperwork, is it what kind of transaction do you think you might have coming up?
Well, I have a friend. He is his wife is very ill with third stage cancer, and he was saying, and he's had like me been kind of in the middle of a jobs transition, and has a lot of financial difficulty along with the health dealing with as well as health matters. And also, he said he tried to rent it out and was having difficulty renting it. And I have yet to see it. So we were talking a little bit about it, what he wanted to do.
So you thinking of maybe you would just take over the mortgage for them?
It's possible, though. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of some ways that I may be able to assist.
I would say so. Yes, the answer to your question is yes. There can be differences, A, depending on the state, and B, depending on what kind of transaction you're going to do. A lease option, certainly there are different laws in different states.
Mm-hmm.
So my suggestion would be if you go to your local REIA, because those are the people who are going to be able to direct you to where to go to, you know, find people to help you get those deals done. Find the people who know how to make this work for you. Find the attorneys who are investor-friendly, the title companies who are investor-friendly. So I would definitely start there.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think that's good for
everybody.
And
best of luck to you. Sorry to hear about your situation. I hope that works out for you.
My friends. Okay. Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
You're very welcome.
Thanks
you
for calling,
well.
Russ.
Sure.
Take care of you.
Thank you, Tiffany.
And so we're talking about helping people avoid the pain in their. So Russ's call was very timely. of what we're talking about here, because fixing mistakes and doing things the right way is paramount, and we've talked about that. So, Kathy, in your opinion, what should investors be double checking before they ever sign a creative deal?
Well, the first thing they should double check is, should I be doing this deal? Many times in the creative financing space, we hear, oh, the deal doesn't really have to cash flow, or the deal doesn't really have to have equity, because, and not completely dismissing those notions, but you have to have something. So it's not completely out of line to say the deal doesn't have to cash flow if, for example, it has a bunch of equity. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to do a creative deal just because you can, and just because you can maybe get in with very little money down and just make payments. But you still have to look at the greater picture. As we talked about at the beginning, you have to know if you have to repair it and how much, and how much it's worth. So if the payment is not really anything more, if the rent or payment that you're receiving isn't really anything more than the amount of the mortgage, okay, maybe it's still a good deal, but then you have to look at why. Why is that a good deal? Well, maybe the answer is, I don't care about cash flow. You know, I'm in this building phase, but this property has, you know, $50,000 worth of equity. Okay, then fine. But you have to really take a look, because you have to have something there. It's not a good deal just because you can get into it with little money down and just sort of in somewhere and the other make payments.
Yeah, you hear a lot out there about people just getting into real estate because it's the sexy thing to do. So I can just get into real estate with no money down and do all these creative strategies. And then you 3, 4, 5 years later, those are the same people you see at the table trying to understand how to get out of the deal. And, oh, yeah, there is no equity because it's been eroded because of the deal that happened, or that was put together, or from a previous loan modification or something that happened, or the interest rates bumped up because it wasn't a fixed rate. And, oh, by the way, it didn't cash flow well, so I pocketed that little $200, and now there are no reserves, and I have a leaky roof, right? So that thing seems to be a really big thing now is talking about the reserves. So I would ask as a follow-up question to you, if an investor realized that they made a mistake, us, the investor, what should they do next? What is the thing they should do next?
Again, I think, let's say don't go post it on Facebook. I think the first thing you should do if you realize you made a mistake is to talk to the people that you surround yourself with. And hopefully for investors, that is people in your local real estate investment groups, in your local REAs, and other investors and professionals who are vendors or who, you know, come to those meetings and operate in that space and who assist those people. That's certainly where I would start if I realize that something, exactly the question was, if they made a mistake in a deal, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it is. And it goes back to the communication. And I'm with you on that thing about the Facebook, the yell for help, like the tribal cry. Yeah. But that not ghosting people is a real thing. And I'm very glad that in our REA here in Cincinnati, and I think yours as well, we have a help night, and we also have offers hours. And so the one thing that I would like to say, people, is if you do realize that there's a problem or an issue, don't bury your head in the sand like an ostrich. It just doesn't work. You have to say something, like speak up, even if you're embarrassed. Make it a hypothetical situation, but come to the table and get experience from people, or information from more experienced people than you in the room. And I think that's what you were alluding to, Kathy.
100%, Tiffany. That is such a great point, what you said about don't bury your head. I think that as human beings, that's sort of our natural instinct when something's going wrong. It's just to sort of let it, maybe think it'll blow over, but it won't. And don't do that. And I mean, I you know, there are weirdos like me out there who peruse these Facebook groups and look for people with problems and you know, try to help them. But, you know, what are the chances that someone like that is going to see your problem. You might just as well get bad advice on top of bad advice. So I would definitely start with your local people that you can trust.
Yeah, no kidding about that. So I know we're coming up on the tail end of our conversation. So here are some rapid fire or high value questions that I'd like to get out before we do our close. So what advice would you give to an investor who wants to do more creative deals but want to do them right this time? Any one piece of information?
Yeah, education, not free education. I know that your RIA, there's probably every RIA does sessions on these.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the Ohio, the CoRE group in Ohio has different topics, two Saturdays a month, and always there's at least a couple times a year that's on creative deals. So surrounding yourself with the right people, with the people in your local area, going to these education, those Saturday sessions are something like $50. I mean, it's a full day of education. You can't beat it. They're fantastic. And, you know, there are people who will come speak at your RIAs on creative deals. So it's out there. Just find it. There's definitely education out there. But don't rely on the free education that you're going to find online.
Okay. What is the difference between being creative and being careless?
Oh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Well, creativity requires, look, you might think of some way to do deals that we haven't even thought of yet. That's creativity. Creativity is thinking outside the box. And I know you've probably heard it before. If you haven't, you need to hear it now. What we do as real estate investors is solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
So creative deals spring from solving problems. You don't know what the problem is without a conversation. So you have to start with talk to your seller. What is their pain point? What do they need? What is their problem? The creative deal is listening to that, taking that information, and giving thoughtful advice and coming up with a solution that solves their problem. That's a creative deal. Carelessness is be running out there and, you know, looking online and seeing someone who says, hey, I have this great deal, and you can take over payments and make a lease option, and then just doing it
exactly
with no due diligence. No, you know, creative deals require every bit as much as, and I would say more, due diligence than a regular deal, because in addition to all your normal due diligence, which you have to do for every deal, you're also taking this extra step of, you know, finding out the problem, finding out how to put a solution together and making it work for all parties. So it's, yes, it's creative, but it's also careful and methodical and done the right way.
Yeah, I like that. I think that people, that definition of the careless thing is right. And people, I cannot stress enough what Kathy is saying. Make sure that you are getting your information from more than one, and make sure that your sources are reputable. Okay, so what about the one thing you wish every creative investor understood before ever doing their first deal?
Well, it's pretty much the same answer.
Yeah.
Don't do it unless you know that you have the resources to do it properly, and don't do it alone. So even if you have learned all this and you've educated yourself, you're never going to go out and do a creative deal alone, because you're going to have that team behind you who's doing the paperwork for you, doing the closing for you. So it's just, I think it's much the same as what we just talked about, is being careful, being thoughtful, being methodical, making sure that all the T's are crossed and all the I's are dotted. And, you know, even we've mentioned several times you're getting advice from people in your local RIAs, but I should mention that does not mean that everyone who stands up at a, you know, who's got what session and says, hey,
right,
I have this deal.
That's right.
That doesn't mean it's a good deal. So, yeah, maybe it is, and it's a great place to find deals. But, again, look for those leaders in your group and those people you know who are experts in this field. Don't think just because a deal came from your RIA, it's automatically a good deal. And I think, as much as I've been saying, get advice from people in your RIA, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that just because it came from Maria doesn't mean it's a good deal. You still have to do your due diligence.
Homework is paramount. So I think that that was a high value answer, because you did say two things that were unique. We talked about all the different scenarios and people you need to, but you talked about building a team and you talked about not doing it alone. And so, Kathy, I have to tell you, it's been incredibly eye-opening about all the powerful tools around creative deals, but only when they're done right. And you mentioned clarity and communication and especially the right paperwork. So I really would like to take the moment to thank you very much for your experience and helping us and our listeners go through this avoiding our landmines today on April Fools. And to everyone out there who is listening and doing creative deals, slow down. Take a breath, do your due diligence, get educated, and for God's sake, make sure that your paperwork is all right. And again, this is Tiffany filling in for Vena Jones Cox, and I thank you very much for spending your evening with me. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week, and until then, happy investing.
Bye. Thank you.